Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's hour number four of the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Hope you're having a great day as we have an eye on the biggest developing sports stories of the day every day right here at 5 p.m. Eric Nadel on his way. We have this big event coming up at 6 o'clock downstairs in our performance lounge. You can come here. Nadel and Jared Sandler talk with Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. Nick Solak, they're going to have a good old Ranger time, and it's free coming up at 6. Eli Manning's retirement, now expected. That was the breaking news last hour, and apparently Eli is going to confirm that on Friday. Biggest news of the day for the Cowboys, Will McClay talking to the Senior Bowl. And the bottom line is, if we want to distill what we learned, they want bigger guys possibly. He does say they're going to continue to have, you know, the same kind of ideas, but bigger guys in the middle of the defense. And it does not look good for Byron Jones. As the way that he was talking around that topic, it's reminiscent of how the Cowboys talk around the topic of other players who they're about to let walk. They're kind of non-committal, and we'll see what we can do, that kind of language. So I would say at this point, Jeff, I am very prepared for the Cowboys to move on from Byron Jones this offseason.
Oh, yeah, I'm not excited about that part, but I'm kind of excited about the rest of that. Like, I was asking for questions for the video today, and Bobby Belt asked me, he was like, hey, what about, you know, different guys that you can now look at that you couldn't in years past? Because we don't really know. That's the first acknowledgement that, hey, Rod Marinelli wanted something. Mike Nolan does not want the same thing.
Yeah.
Are little corners still off limits? Don't know. Are they going to put value into the safety position? Don't know. But it kind of opens the door to everything. It
sure does.
We no longer have to just cross names off and be like, well, the Cowboys don't do that.
It's very exciting.
Because it already sounds like there's going to be an emphasis on the nose tackle. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of fun. Kind of
it
fun
is.
To get a whole new set of expectations for what the team wants.
We'll have more on that topic of team building, by the way, coming up here at 5:20. In the G-Bag Nation on your home of the Cowboys. Anything else from what Will McClay said, though, that jumped out to you? I thought the defensive tackle size and Byron Jones was the biggest takeaways,
no,
right?
I think that's it. It doesn't look good for Byron, and it does look good if we you are, want a fat guy.
We're counting down to Zion's debut. Zion Williamson, the Pelicans host the Spurs, and that is tonight at 8:30 on ESPN if you want to watch it. They're showing footage of him at a college event from last year, and his face is so much leaner. I'm sorry, but I think issue number one for the Pelicans in managing that body, the lower extremities for his career, is get him on some kind of a diet plan. You know, everybody's built different, and some people just process nutrients differently. And you have guys that are freaks that eat 4,000 calories of garbage all day, and they stay lean. Other guys, you know, they just look at a cheeseburger and it's on them. I'd say he's 15 to 20 pounds heavier than he was last year.
He's in the home of good food, bro.
Yes. Oh, dude.
Yep.
Oh, I'll take king cakes. I'll take beignets. Or
rice, a lot of rice and beans.
A lot of good eating down
etouffee.
There.
Etouffee. Oh, yeah.
The gravy, what is that stuff? Debris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, they eat debris down there.
Debris is like kind of like brown gravy and like, what is that, pork Lucius or whatever in it?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's good.
I'm sorry, I just eat it. I can't cook it.
When I think of debris, I think of windblown garbage, you know, something like that. But it's got a different meaning in French, apparently. Okay, Darrell Wright venting on Twitter last night. Let's keep the NBA thing going here. Darrell Wright, DeLon's older brother, he was an NBA veteran. I believe 11 years, and he was not happy last night at the end of the game as DeLon Wright plays just 12 minutes. He's playing great. You talk about the ideal Rick Carlisle type of role player, but there's a log jam. And apparently it frustrated Darrell Wright significantly. So on the same night that Dwight Powell is hurt, now you have a sign that maybe one of your smaller guys is frustrated. And this might kind of be perfect timing. And I don't know if you can call it a blessing in disguise. Anytime a guy has a torn Achilles, that's horrible. But what if a trade comes into view now that you wouldn't have otherwise seen? So keep this in mind as on the ESPN show, The Jump, Brian Windhorst was just on talking about the Mavs are targeting a big who scores 15-plus points per game. So the trade deadline is February 6th. That's 2.5 weeks away. The name that immediately jumped out to me when you're talking about acquiring a big, maybe averaging 15-plus points per game, is Marcus Morris. That's the guy who I would want. You also have Julius Randle and then Robert Covington. So I think either of those three would be great, and maybe there's even more options out there.
I'm going to throw out two other names here, or three other names. I did throw out Aaron Gordon earlier in the show. I don't know how available he is, and I don't know how available these two guys are, but since you said Windhorst and you said 15-plus points a game, there are two centers averaging 15 points and 15.5 points a game. One of them, Hassan Whiteside, who is with the Portland Trail Blazers, and they're having a really bad year as a team. Overall, his numbers are good. It's just a matter of motivating him and hoping that he's super motivated come playoff time, because he is a premium might be too hard of a strong of a word, but when he's focused and he's into the game, he is one of the better players on the basketball court. It's just a matter of, is he going to want to be one of the better players on the basketball court tonight?
He knows where the ball is going. He has long arms and great hands. It's incredible to watch him rebound.
Here's the other one, and around that number is Jonas Valanciunas, who played for Toronto. He's now with Memphis. He's averaging 15 points, 10 rebounds. He's 27 years old. He's with the Memphis Grizzlies, and the Grizzlies right now have the 8th seed in the Western Conference. So I don't know how much Memphis would want to trade him, but they wouldn't give DeLon Wright $9 million. So this is where I don't know, Gavin.
Yeah.
He did get those triple-doubles late in the year, and they were against the Mavericks when the Mavericks were kind of trying to lose at the end of the year to maybe get that pick. But I'm just wondering is if possibly DeLon Wright going back to Memphis, where they don't really have a good shooting guard situation. They have an awesome point guard situation in Morant now. But could he be – Grayson Allen is playing 20 minutes a night almost there now. And he's not much of a player in the NBA, the Duke guy that drove everybody crazy. So just wondering if you could go, hey, DeLon, we'll send you back to Memphis, and we'll pick up the 3 years left on Valanciunas' contract, around $15 million a year, and get a really big, strong guy, because now Jokic isn't going to be able to take advantage of us.
Is Valanciunas healthy?
Now, he hasn't been healthy. He's played it well. I guess he has been healthy. 40 games this year.
Yeah, I'm not too high on Whiteside just because of what we heard from Brad Townsend regarding Drummond. I think it might be pretty close to a hard rule that the Mavs aren't going to go with multiple bigs who can't shoot a three, at least with a legit asset. I say that because if you look on the Twitter account of Tim McMahon, who Jeff Kavanaugh just did and showed me the screen.
You just did Tim McMahon while we were doing a show?
That's just look at his Twitter account and show Gavin the screen. I did that. I pulled that off.
Yeah, the Mavs have touched base with Joakim Noah, who I believe is a free agent.
I guess. He played last year in Memphis and was playing 16 and a half minutes a game for 42 games.
They're also looking at the G League and other options as well. So, I don't know, Mike. Maybe they're going super budget.
Well, I think they have to right now, because I put this out on Twitter and Broadus had a great question after I was kind of like, hey, I think you have to make a trade now. And he's like, but I thought you said Powell isn't a championship player. And I was like, well, what I mean by that is he can't start on a championship team and play 30 minutes and be like, unless you have LeBron and Anthony Davis and another superstar on the team, I'll put two other NBA players out there and we can win. But when it's Luka and four what you're considering really good role players, we're going to have to get better role players than, nothing against them, Dorian Finney-Smith and Dwight Powell are nice NBA role players, but not nice enough to be championship role players. And so I looked at it and I thought, we have to do something now. This was my response to Broadus, is there's 96 minutes for those two spots. Right now we have Porzingis with a bad knee, and we have Maxi Kleba, and that's it. We have literally nobody else, and they both can't play 48 minutes a night. And Boban, they don't really want to play every night. Yeah. It's a matchup thing. So I think they probably are looking for a quick fix, and then maybe come February 7th, I believe, is the trade deadline date, maybe they can get a better fix. But they probably have to bring in a human being, and he has to play immediately, just because we don't want to hurt Porzingis' knee by going, Hey, we're sorry.
Might have to bring back Satnam Singh.
Dwight Powell got hurt. You got to play 36 minutes tonight.
Might have to bring back Satnam Singh or that guy that was in the Air Force. Remember that dude?
Oh, yeah. That was a great pick. We only passed up on Green for that one.
Yeah.
He was the next pick. Why am I... For Draymond? Golden State, yeah, Draymond was the next pick.
Yeah.
Okay, I am very much looking forward to an update on Porzingis. We might have to wait till tomorrow's shoot around to get that, but that'll be amongst the big topics tomorrow late morning, early afternoon as they get set to take on the Trailblazers. I don't care that his numbers weren't great last night. He was active, and if he can do that and not have any problems with the knee, that would be outstanding. I like what Pedro Martinez had to say. He was talking about the Mike Fiers role in the cheating scandal. He said, you call your GM, you tell him, or you call anybody you can or MLB or somebody and you say, I don't want to be a part of this. Or you tell the team, get me out of here. I don't want to be a part of this. Then you show me something. But if you leave Houston and most likely you didn't agree with Houston when you left and then you go and drop the entire team under the bus, I don't trust you. I won't trust you because I did have that rule. I think you could say to Pedro, man, if you are suspicious, then, you know, what are you? Some kind of cheater, right? Because Pedro doesn't want that kind of cheater around. But in sports, the lines might not be clear. And I kind of want to make sure if I'm crossing blurred lines, I don't want to have to wonder about you telling on me or in the gray area. And I think Pedro does make a great point that if you had a huge problem with it, then while it was going on, you could have said something.
Yes.
If it's that big of a deal, but you wanted to stick around and maybe get paid by the Astros, so you didn't say it then,
did
you? I
didn't want to lose my job. Right? I like my job. I like my paycheck.
That is a great point. I think also from Pedro's, though, perspective about maybe not wanting to play with guys like that, there's always guys on the team that, teacher's pet is maybe a bad phrase, but will always kind of be a clubhouse guy where the manager, maybe in today's game, the general manager has a little bit of a relationship with, and he's like, what's going on with him? And I mean, part of that is to kind of say, yeah, you know what? He's dealing with confidence issues right now, man. He's not, you know, and I'm not reporting back that he's cheating. The reason he got hot is because, you know, they're buzzing his shoulder when a fastball's coming. Now every time a fastball's coming, he knows a fastball is coming. He doesn't have to guess or put an educated guess together and like, I think he's going to throw a fastball here because the sequence of pitches would say that he's going to like, no, we're actually giving him the pitch now. That's why he's batting 30 points higher and has more pop because he knows when a fastball's coming and is gearing up for it.
Well, I'll tell you what, I could know when a fastball is coming and I'm pretty sure I would get zero hits all year long. 162 games, 600 plate appearances.
You might touch the ball, though.
Yeah, I think I could get it.
If you didn't know it was hit it.
I could nick it every now and then. Mm-hmm. And maybe after, I don't know, 3 or 4 months, I'd kind of get the hang of it. Maybe I could
when
flare
there were
something
bad
in.
Bad hitters that we would face, and there's not really bad hitters in the major leagues, but sometimes pitchers would say, I can't believe I hit his bat. Because you think they're so bad that they can't hit you. There's no way they could hit you. And then sometimes they get a hit, and you're like, I threw the ball where his bat path was. It wasn't that he made an adjustment and actually swung where the ball was going.
What would pitchers have to say if they like to doctor the ball or they had what were they called, the Emery boards or some Vaseline or KY, and Mike Fiers joins the staff?
Interesting question. I mean, almost every pitcher uses pine tar to make sure their fingers are tacky enough to have a good grip, and that's kind of illegal, but everybody's like, yeah, we have to do it to make sure we have a good grip on the ball. I don't know if Mike Fiers would tattle on all of those things.
Not.
Like, I don't know. Like, let's just say he found out that on the next team he plays on that they have a professional corker in corking the bats. Like, they send their bats to a guy and that he knows that his team is using illegal bats.
I wouldn't tell Fiers. Damn sure in that organization. We're like, hey, the cork thing. Nobody's talking about it until Fiers is gone.
Yeah. I think the tough thing is that you could kind of hide because it's your own personal bat. The tough thing was to hide the big television screen right behind then hearing a big bat like swinging against a trash can.
Do you think it's pitcher versus hitter, you know, stuff or that rivalry that led to this? Because maybe he wouldn't tell on other pitchers, but he had no problem telling on the hitters.
Maybe so. Maybe so. I mean, you know what? He might have not liked. I know Sandler's around the building somewhat, and I don't know if some of the Astros players are universally liked. I mean, for example, I don't know if Alex Bregman is liked by many people, except for maybe the people that play with him, as in he's so good and he leads us to victories, but he's maybe not my favorite guy to be around. And so maybe Mike Fiers didn't like the position players. I don't know. I don't, you know, I'm going to stick with he did it because he's like, this isn't right. I've moved on and they're still doing some sort of
guilty
cheating.
Yeah.
And it's causing me, it's causing my teammates.
Well, I mean, Oakland was really good and yeah. Houston's there and maybe you felt like it cost you a series or something. And yeah. that was the, you know, the guilt along with the competitive nature was the tipping point. You do have a chance to meet not only Jared Sandler, but Hall of Famer Eric Nadell, along with IKF and Nick Solak. Q&A is coming up at 6 o'clock downstairs. So you have 43 minutes to get here, 4131 North Central Expressway. Bring us a pizza, though, if you don't mind.
Yeah,
we're getting kind of hungry
and
up
just,
here.
You don't like a lot of – what do you yeah. not like?
Everything but cheese and pepperoni.
Okay,
when
wow.
it comes to pizza.
You like meatballs
I like
and sausage,
spicy meatballs.
Right?
Yeah, spicy meatballs will work. Yeah,
that's
good.
Pretty good.
Especially from that.
But like onions would just
– oh, that'd be horrible.
Ruin yeah. your life, right? Yeah,
put onions on there it. So I don't eat
well,
it.
If they brought – I'm going to give you a choice. Onions, green peppers, mushrooms. Rank them from worst. Like, do
you
not,
hit the order.
Oh,
I would do onions. I would really, really hate, but I could get green peppers down. Mushrooms would make me vomit.
Okay. Mushrooms are awesome, dude. And they do make you vomit. That is true.
Green peppers is the best of that list.
I heard nothing but facts over there from Lucius, but I do not like mushrooms on my pizza. Okay, when we come back, G-Bag Nation, Jeffrey's going to have a segment at 540. I found out what is going to sell me that this Cowboys team can win the Super Bowl in the next decade. You might have heard me being cynical, and I have been. I apologize for that. Not really. But I found something finally that makes me very confident on the Cowboys moving forward. Do you agree? Welcome back, G-Bag Nation. Yeah, I found something that actually sold me this Cowboys team can win a title in the next decade. I think a lot of good team-building lessons have been learned by this team. Salary cap management. Communication between the scouts and coaches. Ever since the 2013 draft, that was a significant turning point. And this decade overall was a massive turning point. But they haven't done enough right. Could this, what I'm about to tell you about, be the tipping point that allows the Cowboys to take all of their good decision-making, the decision-making that's made them basically an 8-8 team for a decade, and they're kind of immune to being horrible? You look at the things this Cowboys team does good, it's like, hey, nice little collection, but not enough to make you champions, is it? Is this final thing right here going to push them over the edge when it comes to team building?
Need to get the Cowboy Gavin music ready?
You might have to such an extent that they can overcome the challenges, right? We know this organization brings unique challenges, but at some point you can overcome that. Every team that wins has challenges. They just do enough good stuff, they overcome it. Segment's brought to you by Brown Foundation Repair, and it's brought to you by the Frankels. If you're hurt in an accident and it's not your fault, call Frankel and Frankel at 214-333-3333. Go online to frankelfirm.com. Yeah, I think they have a chance to become a championship organization again. I saw this quote yesterday, and we talked about it briefly. I thought at the time it was just about the running game when, you know, Mike McCarthy was basically saying the players are going to determine what the scheme is, not the coaches. And I thought, well, here's a guy, he's talking about, you know, the difference between Aaron Rodgers and Dak, the difference between Ty Montgomery and Zeke. It's like, well, yeah, of course we're going to be running the ball more, not 65% of the time like we did with the Packers, because we have different talent here. But that's not what it was. So I went home last night and I read more on what Mike McCarthy and Stephen Jones were talking about today. And we've hit on it, you know, surface level a couple of times already. But Nick Eatman on DallasCowboys.com did a nice job of sort of diving into this bad boy. And the angle from Nick basically distilled, the Cowboys are going away from looking for types of players and going to more finding good players and then putting them in places to succeed. And this has been something that's gone on for so many years. I don't know if we did enough justice talking about how foolish it was. Anyway, Stephen Jones says, as you all know, Rod Marinelli knew what he wanted in his defense and the type of players he wanted. So there's is some degree of flexibility there. Rod was also really successful and had good defenses, right? Blah, blah, blah. He wants to make sure he doesn't disrespect a coaching legend. They all played the way you want football played. They played hard and hustled to the ball at the same time, as Mike said. We want to find good football players, though, and then put them in the best places to make plays. McCarthy continues on the topic. player acquisition and coaching instruction is a two-way street. If you have a system of defense where you need a certain type player to fit your scheme, you're limiting your personnel department, is what McCarthy said.
Love that.
Let's get as many good football players as we possibly can. It's our job as coaches to make sure our scheme boundaries are wide enough to fit any excellent football player. Any excellent football player, you are welcome onto our team. That's always been a philosophy of mine on offense, and I'll continue to have that on defense as well. You just, if we could just have Mike McCarthy 2 years earlier, you don't have Taco, you have TJ Watt.
Yeah.
And you don't have Tristan Hill, you have a really good, strong safety who just started and played all year for you at a high level as a rookie.
Yeah.
So, you know, I talked about the things the Cowboys have done well and learned this decade, and I think Stephen Jones and Will McClay are highly responsible for a lot of it. Can we now finish and put the icing on the cake of not allowing coaches to come in and sabotage the draft plan? That's great. But also on top of that, what the scouts are challenged with, and that is not to find, oh, specific traits here, specific traits there. And if you can't find those, it's time to move on. Or we're just going to settle and take the guy with the best traits at the position that we need. It becomes an even – the problem compounds the better you get. You know what I'm saying? The better you get doing business the way the Cowboys did this last decade, your needs become smaller and smaller and smaller.
Oh, yeah, now we just need one of those that can play that exact role, and he can't be that big, and that's what we're looking for.
Yeah.
It's Tristan Hill.
Uh-huh. What's weird is in the last 3 years, and the Cowboys have picked some good guys. Leighton Vander Esch, as long as he's healthy, looks like a pretty good pick, and obviously, Michael Gallup looks like a really good pick, and we hope Connor Williams can keep starting and improving. He has the big injury.
Good picks, yeah.
But with their first pick, because Tristan Hill was their first pick, because it was they had to wait, but it was their first pick. They've known the last 3 years who they were picking before the draft started.
That's a problem.
That's horrible.
Yeah, that's a problem.
There's 16 guys we have to wait on when it's whatever day the draft is this year. We shouldn't know who we're taking 17 before the draft starts, because we know that there's no way the first 16 teams are going to take our guy.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Like Leighton Vander Esch, they knew. They're like, he's getting to us. Now, that ended up looking like it could be a good pick. But they knew Leighton Vander Esch, there was no way that Leighton Vander Esch was going before. And they knew that there was no way Taco Charlton was going before. And that's a weird way to do things. In a draft when you're picking in the mid-teens or late 20s or at 58 going, look, we don't care who gets taken 1 through 57. At 58, we're taking this guy. We don't even need to watch the draft because we know nobody's going to want this guy 1 through 57.
It's crazy, right? Because you should be highly alarmed that there's no way that guy's going to be gone. But they're totally happy with it.
Yeah.
If Taco was great and if Tristan Hill was pretty good – and trending towards a good second year, you'd be like, holy cow, you got to give these guys their props. They know who the best player for them is, and they just take that guy.
Yeah.
But because those things failed so horribly, it has to be reevaluated and I think laughed at very, very loudly. Because to me, the fact that they failed exposes something about it. I don't know what it is. I think it's laziness that, oh, this is great. We're doing a good job. Course, and we don't need to work anymore on this. Draft's coming up, man. Can you imagine if we don't know who we're going to pick? We got to work a lot.
We've been tipped off. Nobody likes the guy we like.
We figured it out.
Wait, is that like, can somebody in the room say, is that a problem that the other 16 teams picking in front of us don't like this guy?
Yeah.
Is there a tip off here that we're getting word that the 57 picks before our pick that they're not really interested in this guy? Like, that might be a problem. Should we discuss why the guy we like so much is not liked?
All right, Eric Nadell, come on in, partner, here on your home of the Rangers.
Or else.
105.3 The Fan.
You have to.
We have
an
awesome event coming up with not only Eric Nadell, but Jared Sandler's up here on 11 as well. And downstairs here at 75 and Fitzhugh in 30 minutes, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa and Nick Solak are going to join these guys for a free Q&A with Nadell and Sandler. And they're going to stick around afterwards and sign autographs. So this starts at 6 o'clock, and it is great to see you as always, Eric. How you doing?
I'm doing great. It's great to be here. Last week or two, we've been doing these public appearances with players and traveling around a little bit and seeing how excited people are, and that's what gets me excited about the season.
Yeah, absolutely. These Ranger
fans
are so
passionate.
And then seeing
Jared Sandler in there, that
takes it next level.
Yeah.
Future Hall of Famer, Jared Sandler.
No doubt.
Having Nick Solak there tonight is really exciting because I feel like when they added him, he was one of the guys that every night was like, man, I hope Solak's in the lineup. Let's see what he's got. And it's interesting because it doesn't seem like he could be the second baseman today, but what do you look forward to with Mr. Solak?
Well, he's not the second baseman today. He could wind up as the second baseman. He could also wind up as this year's Danny Santana. I imagine he'll work out at a bunch of different positions in spring training, and maybe he winds up as this year's super utility guy, if that's the right word for it.
How much better do you think the Rangers could be this year if they know what pitches are coming?
I feel really stupid. We played, 10 games in Houston, I think, in 2017, and I didn't notice anyone banging in a trash can even once.
Yeah.
You know, I know my hearing's going bad. I've gone to too many concerts and all that. But still, shouldn't I have heard that at some point coming through the crowd noise mic, which is right there in the screen?
To let you know, maybe they weren't banging the trash can against the Rangers. I've been told by a few Rangers that they thought it was whistling happening against them.
Okay.
So at least from a player standpoint, that maybe against different teams, they did different things. Maybe trash can would be in some games, and other times they would use different types of noises to tip off.
I guess that makes sense. Yeah.
I don't know if you need a tip to beat Austin Bibbins Dirks.
Sir,
that was unnecessary.
Respect for a pro player. Mike Bassick was Austin Bibbins Dirks.
Yeah, except I only had two names.
But you were a left-handed Austin Bibbins Dirks, which puts you in a whole different category. Yeah.
Very deceptive coming from that side.
I didn't beat Scherzer.
Yeah. Hey, nice job, man.
But you did?
No, I didn't. Austin Bibbins Dirks. Like, that's kind of his.
That was his game.
Yeah. All right, so what do you think about the punishments? Like, is MLB trying to slide one under and just have this thing go away? It seemed like it could have been a lot more.
It could have been harsher. I don't know if it should have been. It could have been. They could have penalized the Astros more as a team in terms of their ability to sign international free agents, you know, for example. When the punishment was announced, I was actually surprised it was that harsh. I didn't think that the commissioner would go ahead and be that tough. I also didn't know just how much evidence he had, though, and apparently he had a ton. All in all, I think it's pretty fair. You know, I see both sides of it. I see people saying the Astros aren't punished enough as a team, and then I see people saying, well, you've got to punish the players somehow, but the players needed immunity or they weren't going to have the evidence to punish anybody. Mm-hmm. If the players hadn't gotten immunity for, fessing up.
Just like everything else in the world, cut a deal.
Yeah, exactly. It's a really tricky situation. And the other thing is, you know, if you do anything involving the players, all of a sudden the union's in the middle of it. And, you know, that's a whole new mess to deal with.
Pretty fun offseason so far for the Rangers. Some surprises. Corey Kluber, what do you think, by and large, how much they've improved the team?
I think they've improved a lot. What's the big surprise to me is, given that the Rangers and so many other teams have had success using the opener, the Rangers have gone out and gotten a starting rotation that doesn't need openers if the guys stay healthy. Yeah. You know, if you run out Lyles and Gibson as your fourth and fifth guys, you're not putting an opener in front of those guys, I wouldn't think.
And their bullpen might be too short
to
have an opener.
Well, at least if they do it now, Eric, they're doing it for like, hey, we think that this gives us an advantage, not we don't have anybody who can start today, so just let's throw out this person in inning one and this person inning 2 through 4, and let's hope for the best.
Yeah, I mean, it's a real starting rotation. It's been a while since we've had anything this deep. Certainly the World Series years, you know, come to mind. And then you go back and think about those 96, 98 teams that were really deep 1 through 5 in the pitching rotation.
I did see today that in spring training, I know you're there a little bit during spring training, we're going to have umpires with just like they did in Arizona Fall League, and they're going to have the robot system going to see how the major league players like playing with no umpire calling balls and strikes. It's going to be the robot system they use in Arizona
Fall League.
The
Grapefruit and Cactus League games?
Yes. I don't know how many games they're going to do it, but they said they are going to roll it out in spring training. and have spring training games with robots.
That's fantastic because we plan to wheel in the robot announcers
for some of our games. They got a talk show host version of it yet? I'm ready to rock.
Somebody's gonna be telling me in my ear. It's gonna be like that movie Broadcast News, you know, where William Hurt got all of his cues from the control room. It's gonna be like that. I'm gonna have a robot telling me what to say.
Would you go the whole game just chastising the robot and talking about where it's screwing up, or would you trust it?
I think I'll trust the robot. I believe in the robot. I want to see it tried.
Famous last words right there.
Oh, no.
Here he comes, Eric Nadel. Get here at 6 o'clock because downstairs with Jared Sen, they're going to have a Q&A with Nick Solak and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa.
Oh, yeah, I got to get my plug in too, my concert plug. My birthday benefit concert announced today will be April 29th at the Kessler Theater, and the headliner will be The War and Treaty. If you don't know these guys, they're an incredible R&B group. I saw them for the first time a couple of years ago. Nicole Atkins is going to open, and the tickets go on sale Friday at thekessler.org. April 29th, The War and Treaty. Look them up.
Thank you, sir. All right, coming up next, Jeff has a segment prepared for us. Where are we going with that?
Yes, we got the top 50 prospects in the draft, according to Daniel Jeremiah, and a guy who killed a coyote with his bare hands. It's next.
Well, thank you very much, Lucius. It is the G-Bag Nation, and... coming up at 6, we'll have what's on 105.3thefan.com. Here's Jeff with a seg.
All right, got us a couple of stories about when it rains iguanas, which is a real thing. And, of course, the story of the bravest man in the world, a man after my own heart. But first, Daniel Jeremiah of NFL.com, one of my favorite draft guys. He has released his initial top 50 prospect rankings for the 2020 NFL draft. So I enjoy going through these. Pro Football Focus has theirs out. Dane Brugler has his out. Now Daniel Jeremiah's got his top 50.
Put that thing away.
And where are some of the Cowboy targets? Number one on Daniel Jeremiah's list is Chase Young, Ohio State defensive end. I always wonder about this. Should we factor in their position when we do this? Like, should we just put Joe Burrow number one? Or do you just put, well, this guy's the best at his position, but he doesn't play quarterback, so if you have a need at quarterback, you would never take a great defensive end over a quarterback. But whatever. Chase Young's at number one.
I think we need to redo the grading system with a...
just give him plus 10 points to all the quarterbacks.
Yeah, with a difficulty. You know?
Yeah, degree of difficulty of the position. Yeah. Little and evaluation
you
just, there.
You make all the positions fairly close, and then quarterback is like a 100.
Okay.
You know,
he goes at number two, Derek Brown, the Auburn defensive tackle. So defensive line, and then Joe Burrow at number three for Daniel Jeremiah. These are all guys that you can't have as a Cowboy fan. Very sorry about that. Number four, Isaiah Simmons, who you saw in the national title game, the Clemson linebacker slash safety slash corner slash pass rusher. At number five, Jeff Okuda, the Ohio State linebacker. And I will say to me, those are the cream of the crop guys, where it's like, hey, how many guys, like, you got a top 10 pick, you're super excited to get them. To me, the list starts and ends with those five. Then he goes Tua at number six. Javon Kinlaw, number seven. He's at the Senior Bowl right now, the South Carolina defensive tackle, and he is my dream pick.
Got dinged a little bit, too.
Might not be able to play. Yeah,
it
looked like he got dinged a little bit on one of the plays, and so maybe we could get him in a boot and have his draft stock be affected and drop him down to 17.
Oh, very unfortunate.
That'd be awful for
this
him.
This guy sprained his ankle the first week of Senior Bowl practice.
He's also got a great story. Maybe we'll do his full story one day, but he was basically homeless growing up, so he's got a really cool backstory. He's an easy guy to pull for. Javon Kinlaw, that's the guy you want, Cowboy fans. For Daniel Jeremiah at 8 and 9, CeeDee Lamb, Oklahoma wide receiver, then Jerry Jeudy, Alabama wide receiver.
Couple of juniors.
Still probably guys you can't have. Mekhi Becton, the Louisville right tackle or offensive tackle. He's 370 pounds. He's number 10 for him.
I'll take him.
Jedrick Wills, offensive tackle for Alabama, is 11. Henry Ruggs, the Alabama receiver, is 12. Tristan Wirfs, the offensive lineman at Iowa, is 13. First running back, DeAndre Swift, Georgia. He has at 14, and then at number 15, he starts running into guys that, as the Cowboys, you might consider. He has the top safety in this draft, not as Grant Delpit at LSU, but Xavier McKinney, Alabama. He says Xavier McKinney, instinctive safety for the Tide, also spent some time playing nickel linebacker. Went a line deep, fluid in his movement, quick to key and read and drive on the ball. Range is excellent. While he can effectively locate the ball, he'll occasionally lose a 50-50 ball down the field. Dependable wrap-drag tackler. He has very good feel as a blitzer. Displays timing and burst. Overall, he's an intelligent, versatile defender, and he should be very effective in multiple roles. So that's a guy that you should probably know about as a Cowboy fan. He loves the TCU nose tackle, Ross Blacklock.
What's he like about him?
Has him at number 18. And I watched him the other night, and I was thinking, like, yeah, second or third round, decent little nose tackle. But Jeremiah talks to NFL people, and I wonder if they're telling him that he's going to be a first-round pick. But, yeah, he just says he likes the bull rush, likes the ferociousness, how much he can create knockback on the offensive line, refers to him as ultra-twitchy. So he saw some things in TCU's nose tackle that I didn't necessarily see. So congratulations to him. But that's Daniel Jeremiah's, and then he doesn't have Grant Delpit until 26. He's got Florida corner C.J. Henderson at 23.
A lot of people have him around there.
He's got LSU corner Christian Fulton at 38.
Wow.
Let this be a lesson to you out there. If you watch the tape, put them in whatever order you believe, because you are not going to find people with the guys in the same order. And if you do, they're probably a product of groupthink, and you don't want to be looking at their stuff anyway.
Might be doing favors.
Mm-hmm.
Scratch my back, scratch yours.
More important news, New Hampshire. Coyote on the loose. Not just a coyote, a murderous coyote.
Ooh, coyote ugly.
Coyote attacks. It attacks a pair of dogs. Okay, did that. Survived. Lived to tell the tale.
Must have been smaller dogs.
Bit a woman. Skirmished with a vehicle.
Wow.
All things that this single coyote did in New Hampshire.
Coyotes usually figure out to run away from vehicles. It must have been a rabid one.
Before a father who was defending his family on a walk decided, you know what?
Whoa.
It ends here.
Don't you dare cross a dad on a walk with his family. I'll stand in front of three pit bulls. Get behind me, kiddo.
It ends.
I got this handled.
That. Ian O'Reilly, quote, there was no running away. It would not allow us to run away.
Yeah.
It was very much the aggressor.
It's go time.
I don't know how you sound in New Hampshire. Probably not like that. But he said, yeah, it just had to go down.
You got
to
get your best Caesar Milan stance on right there.
He's out there with his wife, three young children. They're hiking Jude's Pond, of course. You guys know Jude's Pond there in the neighborhood somewhere in New Hampshire. Coyote goes after his young son, caught the hood of his jacket, and pulls his kid to the ground.
That was your worst move of your life, dog.
So Ian, he grabs the kids before the animal could bite anybody, and he said, all right, it's me and you. And he stood between the family and the coyote. I don't know what stance he got into, but I picture him getting into kind of like a linebacker stance, maybe a baseball defensive position, being prepared for the pitch.
Your standard athletic position.
Yeah, and he says, all right. He says he was eye to eye with that snarling beast. So maybe he got way down. If he got eye to eye, he got way down there.
Why didn't the coyote start running?
Well, probably rabid, like Gavin's saying. Probably, you know, he's lost it.
Or very hungry.
Yeah.
Yeah, at that point, like, you'd figure a coyote would just take off. Like, oh, my God, this person's about to attack.
I need to go get my team. Yeah. I'll be right back.
Now, our guy Ian, he did exactly as I've coached people to do.
Stop it.
If you ever have to fight a coyote,
this
is exactly the approach I would take.
Forearm in the mouth to preoccupy it?
No, that wasn't his first move. His first move was he kicked it square in the jaw.
Oh, yeah, that's better.
Yeah, he got a good kick on him, which I'd struggle with the kicks because of the knee thing. It would hurt just the vibrations of kicking that thing in the jaw. But kicks it in the jaw, which actually drops the coyote, and he dives on. And he's like, all right, we're getting it.
Nice.
Yeah, he dives on him.
A little ground and pound.
Yeah, he jumps on him for the ground and pound. And then he chokes the life out of him.
Get out of here.
Nice.
Strangled the coyote. What
kind of choke was it? Guillotine? Naked triangle?
I think so, because what I would do is go right forearm just into the neck. Obviously, you want to lock it in with your other hand. And then you want to wrap your legs around his midsection
get the hooks
fully
in.
Cut it off. Yeah, you get the hooks all the way in.
What do you do with his mouth?
Got no chance. What?
What do you do with his mouth?
I don't worry about it.
You hold his mouth with your hands or something? What are you doing with his
mouth? No, because I have to lock in the triangle, so I can't do that. You have to be willing to take some punishment.
So they're just...
Yeah, you're going to get bit.
Well, if you get the forearm, though, into the neck area where
you can kind of lock him.
and you're using the ground, that mouth is going to have a tough time getting to your...
You guys get ate up, bro.
No, because I roll over, and I actually put him up and me on the ground because I want to sink the legs in to fully choke that sucker out. That's what you got to do.
I think
his mouth would be there to bite my chin or whatever,
and I bleed. Your chin, your neck, your upper bicep. Now, you want to go with both hands around the neck, full extension.
I respect that approach.
With knees on his body.
I respect that approach, and that is probably the way if you're looking for a flawless victory, like in Mortal Kombat, but I'm just looking for assured victory, so I'm going with my best hold.
And you want to be able to whisper in his ear, good night, that is right. Say good night.
Yeah, he said, in the moment, you don't really pay attention to what's going on. You just try and go with whatever goes through your brain. Instincts, right. I suppose. And his instincts were, kill this coyote.
That's badass, dude.
They say it was probably the same coyote responsible for attacking a vehicle, biting a 62-year-old lady and her dogs on a porch. All three attacks were relatively close together. Law enforcement officials were searching for the coyote when they got word Ian had taken it into his own hands. They said the coyote came out of the woods and grabbed a child by the jacket. Dad went into protection mode, strangled the coyote. And I have a picture of the coyote. It's this one right here. It's that coyote. Any one of us could have taken it. What you have to do is overcome your fear.
It's a 45-pounder right there at most.
Yeah, that's easy.
They're so skinny anyway.
Yeah, one coyote is
scrawny little dogs.
Question:
I kind of want to do it just to go viral. You know, I need to find coyotes and then
you will go viral. Like win or lose, you're going to go viral, fam.
Text into the Autoflex Leasing Fan Text, 877-881-1053. What city do you live in, and do you have coyotes?
Los Colinas.
We'll come get a couple.
Los Colinas, there's still coyotes.
Yeah, I'll take one.
Yeah, come on through.
I think we should do a challenge. Can you handle it one-handed?
I think Dawson should fight one.
I think you go left hand behind the back, you keep your good hand, and up the degree of difficulty, because they don't have thumbs and they're light. It's way too easy. But shout out to this guy for taking it into his own hands and choking the life out of a coyote.
There it is, your segment with Jeff daily at 5:40.
Got cold in Florida, and when it gets cold in Florida, you know what happens? The iguanas freeze, and they fall out of trees.
I saw that on Amanda's Twitter account. Yeah, she said you had to look out for them.
It's in the news. Says the night the iguanas fell, cold snap chills Florida, lizard meat up for sale.
Oh, they don't wake back up?
No. Apparently they do. It doesn't kill them. They don't die.
Huh.
But they freeze, and they just can't obviously hold on to anything because their body doesn't work anymore. Hmm. And then when it warms up, they can just pop right back up and be like, all right, that was cool. But yeah, but people, I guess, snatch them up, start beheading them and making nuggets or tenders or whatever.
Okay, is that popular, huh? Is that good?
Why wouldn't you?
We have the audio. Will McClay has spoken in Senior Bowl class today. Will new coaches want
their... We already know who we're taking at 17?
And more. As Will McClay, will the new coaches want the same type of players as the old ones and more? It looks like about 15 cuts or so that Jimmy the Saint just sent us. So we got some golden audio here from the Cowboys president of player development stuff, Will McClay. He's the man. He's the myth. He's the legend. He's a total awesome guy, and we'll give you what he says about all the big Cowboy stuff coming up next here in the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.